You are listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider on the official Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Jerry Knapp.
Hello, Raider Nation. Welcome to another edition of Once a Raider, Always a Raider. I am your host, Jerry Knack. All this year, we are celebrating 60 years of Raiders football, and each home game features a specific theme. This week, we are honoring the 1983 Raiders, who won Super Bowl 18, 38-9, over the Washington Redskins at Tampa Stadium in Tampa, Florida. Running back Marcus Allen was named MVP of that Super Bowl as he ran for 191 yards. His 74-yard touchdown run has become the stuff of legend. However, as much as we talk about the offensive output that season and in that game, and rightfully so, we don't talk about the defense nearly enough. The 1983 Raiders defense featured Howie Long, Lyle Alzado, Reggie Kinlaw, Matt Millen, Mike Haynes, Lester Hayes, Mike Davis, Van McElroy, Ted Hendricks, Rod Martin, and a brash rookie out of TCU by the name of Greg Townsend, a defensive end who would go on to record 107.5 sacks during his Raiders career, the most in team history. I had a chance to catch up with Greg. Joining me now on Once a Raider, Always a Raider, please welcome to the program the all-time leader in sacks in Raiders history, is a 1983 Super Bowl 18 champion. He's also a two-time Pro Bowler. Please welcome to the program Mr. Greg Townsend. Greg, how are you?
How you doing, big guy? Everything's good, man. But, you know, the one thing I like that introduction to read, not just all-time sack leader, the Raiders' all-time defensive lineman. All-time. I lead them in every category there is, from sacks to fumbles to touchdowns to safeties to batted balls to games played, all that. I lead them in all that. So that's for just can't cheat the people and let them know about the sack record. We got to let them know about all the records.
Well, Greg, you did have a remarkable career with the Raiders. Played in 174 regular season games. You had three interceptions and a touchdown on an interception return. You had 13 forced fumbles. You had seven fumble recoveries and 67 yards of fumble returns and three touchdowns.
I did that in 1 year.
Yeah, that's just amazing career that you had. That's great. Greg, what I always like to do with everybody on the show is talk about how you got into the game of football in the first place.
Well, I'm the youngest of five boys in my house, and my brother Larry was always influential as an athlete. So as me growing up as a youngster, I'm watching him play baseball, football, and basketball every year. So we had the same circle of friends. You know, if he had a friend, that friend had a little brother. So we were always around each other, and I was able to see him play and work on his game. So when I got of age, not that my mom let me, I went and played anyway. So at that point, I was just following him. So that's how I got introduced to sports in general, and football became my sport because of I couldn't hit the baseball. So I needed a bigger target. So I said, let me go play some football. And that started becoming a lot easier and having a little success at it. And so I started growing at that.
And you grew up in L.A., and L.A. high school football is legendary. There's several places in the country where high school football seems to be taken a little more seriously than others, and Los Angeles is one of them. What was that experience like?
Well, I'm going to take you back just a little bit further. In Pop Warner, my sponsor at that point, he was sponsoring our team, which was called the Watts Wildcats, was Kermit Alexander, who played for the Rams / 49ers and the Philadelphia Eagles. So he was a influential part too, me watching him come out to our practices and our banquets and things of that nature. So I'm seeing this pro figure from a young age as well. But then once I got in high school, this is the funny thing now. Before high school, I used to play football, quote unquote, in the street. You know, I know people always want to tell you they played in the vacant field with a broken bottles and the bricks were at and all that stuff, but we literally played in the street, and we, you know, somebody got mad at you because you were beating them and you were scoring on them, they'll tackle you. So one time I got tackled in the street and hit my knees on the curb. So the doctor said, you cannot play football until you get in high school. So at this point, I was just playing baseball and basketball. And then once I got to high school, I was at that, and kind of got turned off of football. I became a dancer. I was one of them street lockers. So at that point, then my body grew. I grew from 5'10 to 6'2 over the summer. And, and so at this point, I wasn't looking like a great dancer no more. Some big old guy up there dancing, that don't look good. So that's when I started back playing football my sophomore year in high school. And I went out for tight end and things of that nature. And my coach, James Embry, he saw a little something in me. He moved me to fullback and linebacker the next year. And he just was my biggest fan, too.
How'd you end up at TCU?
Well, this is that story. Now, I always aspired to go to UCLA, USC. I mean, I just grew up in that kind of era where just the best football players were just going to those schools. And it came down to where you can, you know, as you get older, you can see how why them teams are so good because they got so much depth.
Right.
You know, the third string should be starting. You know, it was just that much depth there. So it was just like, okay, I don't want to go there and be part of the depth. So there was one team called TCU that's come out there, and I knew their record, and I knew they were getting waxed. But at the same time, I knew who their competition was. And I said, well, I'll go out there in Texas and put my skill set against the guys from Texas because that would really let me know where I'm at. I thought it would. And so TCU told me I have the starting job to lose. So they were giving me a starting position before I even came. So that's how that became a more easier choice coming out of a junior college. You just don't have time to be sitting on nobody's bench and being part of the depth chart.
Right. Well, 1983, you were drafted by the then Los Angeles Raiders in the fourth round in the NFL draft. And you join a team that has Howie Long, Matt Millen, Rod Martin, Ted Hendricks. The team trades for Mike Haynes in the middle of the season, but there's Van McElroy, Mike Davis, Lester Hayes. There's a lot of great talent on this team.
Yeah, all that. All
and here
that,
comes
man, you're right.
Here comes Greg Townsend out of TCU. And you record a double-digit sack season, 10.5 sacks your rookie year. You had a fumble return for 66 yards and a touchdown your rookie year. And on top of all of that, you had 4.5 sacks in the playoffs and win a Super Bowl your rookie year.
And had a sack in a Super Bowl.
Yes, you did.
That was a rookie phenomenon, man. That was an awesome year that year. But, I can't take all that credit because all them guys you just named, they made the job so much fun and so much easier for me to do my job. Getting drafted in 83 by that team, all I wanted to do was contribute and try to fit in. So bad because, you know, there are a bunch of good guys out there for one, and they took good care of me when I got there as a rookie, helped me find my way, encouraging me every way they could. I remember, you talking about all those guys. The year we was in minicamp and the veterans came to camp, I was living my dream at that point. I know my coach had to get my attention a couple of times because I couldn't believe I was on the field with those guys wearing that same outfit that they were wearing. It was just unbelievable. So that's why I just wanted to try to fit in and contribute as best I could. And it came Monday night against the Miami Dolphins when I ran back that touchdown, 66 yards for a score. You know, you run that touchdown and you see all them guys empty the bench and come out and congratulate you. You knew then you arrived. You arrived. You're a Raider now.
Yeah.
Can't nobody take that away.
Yeah, because everybody seems to have that moment where they feel like they belong, right?
Yes, yes. Because I'm telling you, there was a couple other guys like Don Mosbar, Bill Perkel, even Tony Caldwell, myself, and Doki Williams, who was in that draft class in 83. Don Mosbar couldn't play because he had a bad back. Bill Perkel just coming off of back surgery. So he's trying to contribute to myself. Tony Caldwell, he can't get off the bench, of course, because he got Rod Martin and Ted Hendricks in front of him. He can't get off the bench. And then you had myself. So you, not all of us rookies had that same experience. Some guys didn't get a chance to contribute is what I'm getting at.
Right.
Me feeling that, feeling like I was one of those lucky ones who got a chance to do that on that special 1983 team. I'm just elated by that by itself.
And then offensively, you know, Jim Plunkett at quarterback, you had Cliff Branch, you had Malcolm Barnwell.
Marcus Allen. Hawkins.
Absolutely.
I mean, on the line, we had Dave Dalby, who was a fixture on that team. He was the second center in Raider history at that point. And this is just a phenomenal group of guys, man.
Tell me about that season just in general. Take me through 1983 all the way up until playing the Redskins in the Super Bowl.
Okay. Now, we open up against Cincinnati Bengals. We go down there, and we pretty much dominate them. Of course, they had Anthony Munoz, but Lyle was going to be over him, and we were seeing Lyle getting some success over him. And we had about 7 sacks in that game. And so then the next game we played against Archie Manning, Peyton's father. And I got a sack against him, and I thought that was perfect because I always – knew of Archie when I was playing, and we would just had that attitude that we were going to win all our home games and half our road games, and that's all we talked about. It was just like an ongoing conversation because every Thursday we had the day called Camaraderie Day that all of our teammates got together off the field, a chance to talk about things that, you know, we want to talk about. And so those things was going on all year long. We had certain we had certain kind of what you say, rituals, or
sure.
We had what we thought was bad luck because you had people like Cliff Branch and Mickey Marvin who never washed their uniform because they felt like if they did, we was going to lose. Guys were sitting in the same seats at breakfast and on the airplane because they just felt like that was going to help us win. Guys had the same meal, ate the same meal with the same people at the same time because they feel like this is what's going to help us win. I'm telling you, that's all we thought about is how to win. And in doing those little rituals seems a little corny, seems a little offbeat, but if you will, it just kept our minds on winning. And if I used to eat nachos right before the game, I didn't like jalapeno. I didn't like them then. But I like them now. But jalapenos were too hot for me. But I'll throw a couple of them on the nachos and see if they stick. And if they stick, I swear, if I ate 3 of them that day, I expect to get 3 sacks. It was just that kind of mindset that trained us to think the way you need to play. And you know, you had an owner over there, Al Davis, saying, "Just win, baby." So it was just that reinforcement on everything, on all that. And we went through that whole season. I remember just really having a good time. I think our only nemesis then was Seattle, because we went up to Seattle and lost that one. And then they had nerves to give us 4 days off one time a week because we was going to play the Cardinals next following weekend. And we lost to that, which we shouldn't have. And Tom said, "Okay, you know, y'all messed it up for the future Raiders. We'll never have 4 days off again." And it was just all that going on, but it was just everybody out there feeling like you play up to your part. And that was the next thing, too. Even though we lost that game against the Cardinals, I think that was the only game we played down to. We thought our opponents wasn't good enough, so we just thought we'd just show up. It'd be good enough. But that was the lesson we needed to learn at that point. Needed to learn that lesson going into those last few games because at this point we knew now we have to play top potential because that's the way we can have some fun.
Well, you'd beaten San Diego 42-10 the week before in San Diego.
Yeah.
before that Cardinals game and then beat
right,
San Diego.
It was a Thursday, November 10th. I remember that day like it was yesterday. It was November 10th. We played the San Diego Chargers. We beat them that Thursday, and he gave us 4 days off before we played the Cardinals, and it was crazy.
And then you turn around and beat San Diego again to end the regular season. You get into the playoffs, and you wallop Pittsburgh 38-10, and after Seattle swept you in the regular season, defeat Seattle 30-14 in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, I got to tell you about a little bit about that Pittsburgh game. I was going against what I considered the best tackle in football at that point, but hell, I'm just a rookie. What do I know? I'm going against a guy named Larry Brown for the Steelers. And he had this Barbados, he's from the Barbados, so he had this accent, that's an island accent. So he was grabbing me, he was throwing me on the ground, man. He was just kicking my butt, right? And he would use that accent on me. He said, "Come on, Greg, get up. Get up. You're better than that." And I was like, you know, I'd be looking at him all frustrated, like, I don't know what to do. So I called Lyle over there. I said, "Lyle, let's come over here and run this bump tough on this guy. Man, he over here kicking my butt." So Lyle got a tackle. I was at the end. I distracted him. Lyle cleaned his clock. I went and sacked Stroud. I ran back over to Larry, and I said, "Get up, Larry. Get up. You better than that." That's the kind of fun we were having, man. It was just so fun. And like you said, then we played our nemesis, Seattle Seahawks, after that. And we rolled over them, and that 30 to 10 or something like that.
30-14.
And I believe I recorded the longest sack in playoff history during that. I sacked Jim Zorn for 23-yard loss.
Oh, wow.
And I believe that still stands as the longest sack in playoff history. So then we went on to the Super Bowl. And whew, when we went to Super Bowl, I'm talking about, you know, all the rituals I was telling you about?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody stayed to those rituals.
I'm sure you did.
Look, if somebody saw somebody doing something that they didn't see them doing last week, they reminded them, "Hey, man, you didn't do that last week."
And last week you tied the left shoe first. Do it again.
It was so great. And then, of course, you know, our famous our game speech that Tom Flores gave us before the game is, "Men, they don't remember second place team." That was our speech.
Yeah, they don't remember who won the silver medal in the Olympics. They don't remember who finished second.
Yes.
No, it's...
And, you know, right when he said that, I tried to think of who lost last year to the Redskins, and I couldn't think of it right away, and I said, "That's what he meant."
Mm-hmm. I know, but that's kind of my job to know. But what do you remember of the Super Bowl experience itself at Tampa Stadium?
Ah, the end of the game. That was the best part. I mean, because we had won, but if you want to talk about in the game, it was that first score when we blocked the punt. I was on that punt team when they blocked us. So I was on the field when that happened, and that was elating enough to get that first score. And like you said, you'd be talking to my friend soon as Jack Squire when he got that interception. That just kind of nailed the coffin shut for us. I was concerned. It was about having some fun after that.
Yeah, you know, I can't think of another Super Bowl that was more a complete victory. You scored every which way you could score except for on a kick or a punt return. You had touchdown passes. You had touchdowns on the ground, scored one on special teams. Obviously, you had the greatest punter in the history of the game. Had
oh,
a moment.
Yes, right guy.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Saved a snap that went over his head and pulled it down and was able to get the punt off. That could have changed momentum in the game. And you had one of the greatest individual Super Bowl performances in Super Bowl history with Marcus Allen's 191-yard night. It was a special, special game, obviously, when you can come out on top in a Super Bowl game, no matter the score of the opponent. But you guys, that was one of the most complete team victories in Super Bowl history.
Oh, again, we played them early that year in regular season, and they beat us. So it has all the implications that the Super Bowl is going to be pretty good. And I didn't know it was going to be a blowout, though. I thought it was going to be pretty good like the regular season game took place. And knowing they were defending champs, and they were also that year, they had scored the most points in NFL history at that point. So we were going to the Super Bowl against that.
Yeah, and
you know,
Right, and like you said, the defending Super Bowl champs.
Yes, and we were underdogs too.
Yeah. And, you know, they had Joe Theismann, who is one of the better quarterbacks in NFL history. They had, you know, a great wide receiver core. They had one of the better offensive lines ever assembled. And you guys beat them soundly, 38-9. You got turnovers. You terrorized Joe Theismann for four quarters. It was a complete game for you guys.
I think we ambushed them. I think they were reading too much of the press clippings and all that good stuff, you know, knowing that they were defending champs. They were back in the Super Bowl. They knew they had beat us earlier in the regular season. But, man, I didn't see that coming either. But I knew how we felt about that. You said something about Matt Millen. You said something about Matt Millen. I'm going to tell you the story real quick. We were practicing, and Matt Millen says, "Oh, practice is boring today. I think I'm going to go out there and start a fight."
Of course.
So Mickey Marvin and him has this fight, and it just boosts practice up. The morale just kind of went through the roof at that point. Everybody was ready to practice and get on a good pace with practice. And it just, those are things that people just knew to do. I mean, he did that deliberately, but he knew that would wake practice up and do us a lot of more good than if we just stayed in that same frame of mind that we were in.
Sure.
That's the kind of stuff that was just taking place there. Guys were just thinking all the time.
By that point in the season, you know, you'd played 16 regular season games, you played two playoff games. Did you ever feel caught up in the moment playing in the Super Bowl as a rookie in the National Football League?
Not really, because, for one, I was coming off the bench. I was just playing in the pass defense, and, you know, I had this attitude that I wasn't a special player. I wasn't a specialist player. I was an every-down player. So I was out there trying to prove something. So as many games as I can get into and prove something, because I was playing against behind the great Howie Long. So at this point, I just knew that we either had to blow them out for me to get out there, but then that was going to be trash time, what we call trash time. You know, anything can happen, so you can't really judge a player on that kind of stuff. But I just wanted to get in the game and show these guys that I'm more than just a pass rusher. I was a every-down player because I came in the league weighing 235 pounds. So they didn't want to put me in no rundowns. But I was begging and asking, can I play, can I play, can I play? Oh, Howie's tired. Howie's limping. Howie's doing this. You know, he's doing that. Anything to get myself in the game. You know, I was just always on the coach about that kind of stuff.
Well, you carved out a pretty good career for yourself because – you ended up becoming a full-time starter. You had 107.5 sacks as a Raider, 109.5 in your full career. You had seven seasons of double-digit sacks. The most you had in one season was 13 in 1991. That 83 team wasn't the only time you went to the playoffs. The team went to the playoffs in 1985, won the division again in 1990. You guys went to the playoffs several times, and you played in 10 playoff games. There's guys who play their entire careers, play as long as you did, that didn't play in one playoff game. And you got to play in 10 playoff games, and you were a key member of those Raiders teams.
I tell you, I'm so fortunate. You know, when you're playing, you're not thinking about these things, but when you get out of your career and you have a chance to reflect, you will you know, I am proud of what I've done, and, you know, because where I come from, not too many people do that, and so I'm proud of that, and the people around me are proud of it, too. So, I mean, I'm almost 20-some years, 22 years removed from the game, and people still talk to me like I played last week, you know, and it's just amazing to me how that is still resonating with a lot of Raider fans and fans in general that saw me play against their team.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you say 22 years and it really doesn't seem like that long ago that you were on the team. You came in the league about the same time as a guy named John Elway, quarterback for the Denver Broncos, and you and the Raiders had some knockdown dragouts with John Elway. And people might want to say, well, you know, Elway, he had to have a winning record against the Raiders. Well, he actually didn't. And Elway, Elway spent a good part of his career running from you.
Yes, he did. I'm on record for sacking John Elway 45 times. And that is, to me, he always made me play my best game because I knew if I didn't or if I let him get loose, he would didn't do a number on us. So that was my thinking going into that game all the time against John Elway. And I believe the only time Denver beat us is when they played other quarterbacks other than John Elway.
Right, exactly. Yes, which is a crazy thing to think about. And, you know, the thing about Elway was he wasn't exactly a stick in the mud. Elway could run.
Oh, I mean, and especially in Denver, because that air is thin. So any kind of running he's doing is going to get you where it hurts. I think that's the only feel I believe I only tapped out of. I tapped out. I had to come out and get some rest.
I think I tapped out walking to the press box elevator from the bus. That's how bad that place is.
Yeah, because, you know, he did one of those numbers. You know, back in his younger days, Elway would go to the right side, the left side, and you know, he look a little bit like Lamar Jackson out there a little bit. So it's just like he was the Lamar Jackson of his time, you know, and he was the one to be reckoned with as far as scrambling ability and a strong arm. And that was my guy. That was just my guy to get to. And when I see John all the time, and we talk about some of those days, and it's just fun because he has more to say to me about chasing him down than I have to say about catching him.
Well, the last year of your first stint with the Raiders was 1993, and speaking of the Broncos, you guys pulled off a rare feat and beat them three times in one season. I've talked to Jeff Jaeger about this multiple times because Jeff beat them twice in a regular season on field goals, and then you end up having to play them 2 weeks in a row, end of the regular season, and then the wild card round of the playoffs. Jeff Hostetler's your quarterback, and you guys beat the Broncos three times in 1 year.
Wow. That's just a feat in itself because, you know, they were always a good team that could take over a game. I mean, they'd done that over and over. So when, you know, we just knew how to play teams and we just knew how to prepare for them. I mean, it was the same way with San Diego Chargers. Even though we beat them, they were a tough team to beat. We knew they was going to put points on the board. We just had to just outplay them. You know, that's just what it comes down to sometimes with some of these teams. You just have to weather the storm and just keep playing. And that's just how we won. So a lot of these games, we just outplayed these guys.
And like you just said, you just kept playing. You put forth that extra effort on one more snap than the other team did, or you made one more play than they did.
And I think, too, this is the Raiderism. This is about Raiderism. We can make mistakes, but then you have to make up for your mistake. And that's what we had a lot of players doing. Whenever, you know, just win, baby, wasn't just a cliche. It wasn't just a cliche. I mean, you go out there, I don't care if you have to get a personal foul. I don't care if you had to get a personal foul. Just whop a guy one time. But long as you win, long as you come out winning on that end, meaning after that whop that you done now defeated this guy, your coach ain't got nothing to say to you about that because that's just what needed to happen at that point. I've done that on several occasions, whopped a few guys and got a personal foul. And believe me, by that next play or two, I didn't recover the fumble or I didn't cause the fumble. So it was one of those things that, yeah, get the 15 yards if that's what it takes. But now make up for that 15 yards with some sense of urgency and have it where it won't hurt your team, where it would help your team.
Right.
Great. And that was the Raiderism.
Well, you know, again, You said it perfectly that just win, baby, wasn't a cliche. It was it's a way of life. It's the mantra around here. It's what we try to do every day in everything that we do.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my coach, Earl Leggett, who taught me all these moves. I mean, the first day of camp, he laid down 7 moves for me, and I picked them all up. And without that, I don't know if I would have had the success in the league that I did have. So I'd be remiss if I didn't never mention Coach Earl Leggett, who taught me everything I know. And, of course, I know Howie Long and Bill Bukel and Lalo Zato would say the same things.
Well, I'll tell you what, I would not have wanted to have been an NFL quarterback at that time staring at the likes of you guys across the line from me. No thanks. That's nightmare fuel right there.
Yeah, that was a nightmare.
You guys were something else. And, Greg, you were a great NFL player and a great Raider. I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me during the holiday season here on Once a Raider, Always a Raider.
And thank you for calling and having this interview, because I'm glad they're celebrating the Super Bowl 18 champs, and because they were a wonderful team. That was one of the best teams, in I believe, in football when you think about it. I'm remiss to want to put them up against the Chicago 85 Chicago Bears. I'm remiss to want to put them up against the 2002 and maybe 2016 Ravens. And that team was just that good as those teams. So I am so fortunate and so happy I played on that team. And it was so funny, too. We're talking real quick. Max got that record for the franchise record that I told you I didn't know I had. And so a lot of my old teammates was texting me and says, "Yeah, but he don't have a ring, Greg."
That is very true.
That was the funny part there.
Well, John Madden said after the team won Super Bowl 11, and he said in his Hall of Fame acceptance speech, "Once you win that, they can never take it away from you." And you being a member of the 83 Super Bowl championship team with the LA Raiders, they can never, ever take that away from you.
And even more so, they can't never take it away, and they won't take it away. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like those memories and that fun we had was just so contagious. Those guys on that whole team and the staff and the back, even the front office people, I love them. I love them. I love them, because I'm just so grateful to be part of that.
Well, Greg, we're grateful that you were a member of that team and contributed to a Super Bowl championship.
Yes.
I'd like to say thank you again for being on the program, and happy holidays to you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Thank you again.
Greg had a remarkable run during his NFL career, and I'm a bit surprised that he is rarely, if ever, in the conversation for induction in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Another defensive player on that 1983 championship squad was a second-year linebacker by the name of Jack Squirek. He came to the Raiders in the second round of the 1982 NFL Draft by way of the University of Illinois. With one play in Super Bowl 18, Squirek joined elite company, becoming only the second player to return an interception for a touchdown in a Super Bowl for the Raiders, joining Willie Brown in a very exclusive club. I had a chance to chat with Jack about his time in silver and black. All right, Jack Squirek, thanks for joining me on Once a Raider, Always a Raider. Want to wish you happy holidays. How are you?
Good, good. And things have been going well.
Good. I always like to ask my guests on the program how you discovered the game of football in the first place.
I was probably about, I'd say, 10 years old, and maybe a little bit younger, but I remember, you know, we used to, friends of ours would play, we played backyard football, and I always kind of liked the physicality of it, tackling people and taking your aggressions out. But I just found that it was something that I excelled at more than like baseball or basketball. So I think I gravitated toward it because of that fact.
And growing up in northeastern Ohio, too, you grew up near, you know, a lot of
great football, both college and professional. You're near Cleveland. You're right there in Cleveland. You got Pittsburgh, Buffalo, and, you know, you've got Ohio State, Penn State, all those different colleges in the area. Yet you ended up playing your college football at Illinois.
Yeah, I always enjoyed following Ohio State. That's the Woody Hayes era. They had all those great players and won Big Ten championships and also won, I think, the national championship in 69. But so I always kind of enjoyed following them, reading about them, watching them on TV. And they didn't really recruit me that high. They didn't really recruit me, so I obviously didn't end up going to Illinois. Illinois was more interested in me than Ohio State, and I wanted to stay in the Big Ten, so it was kind of a natural choice for me.
How good of a team was Illinois back then?
We weren't that good my freshman year. Illinois usually... they're up and down. This year they're kind of about middle of the road. But they were. I think the first year we won two games and three games, and then eventually my senior year we ended up being 7-4. We're ineligible for a bowl game. But we had a pretty good team by the time we were seniors, and then we built onto that, and I think in 1984 they went to the Rose Bowl, so it was kind of nice to be part of that tradition.
Yeah, and you know, you laid the foundation, helped lay the foundation for that future success.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was very exciting, and they've also had some great tradition as far as linebackers and other players. Dick Butkus, probably the best linebacker ever, went to Illinois, and he was somebody we always looked up to.
Did you enjoy your experience in Champaign? It's, you know, talk about weather.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too bad. I mean, it's a little bit warmer than Cleveland, maybe by 10 degrees. But, yeah, it was a good time. Had a lot of fun socially. And also, you know, had met a lot of great friends, so I really enjoyed it.
Well, coming out of college, 1982, you were drafted in the second round by the newly minted Los Angeles Raiders. The team had just was in the process of moving from Oakland to Los Angeles, and you were taken in the second round. Do you remember your draft experience much?
Yeah, kind of, because we had, I went to, the combine was the first combine that they had in 1982, so I was part of the first combine. So that was an experience. It was basically like a track meet. So yeah, it was an experience. It was probably nowhere near what it is today as far as, you know, televising it and things like that, but it was still kind of neat to be part of that that experience. It was a little nerve-wracking, though. I mean, you have about 150, 200 guys there, and it's basically like a competition.
Yeah, you're really putting yourself out there in so many different ways when you go to an event like that, and you're scrutinized in ways you've probably never been scrutinized before.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you find out you were going to be a Raider?
Well, I just remember ESPN televised the draft. I think the first year was the year before, 1981. And I remember the Raiders calling me and saying, "Jack, do you have an agent?" And I told them, yeah, I did. I had Lee Steinberg at the time. And probably they said, okay, there's a chance we could be drafting you. We hung up, and then I watched the draft on TV, and I think it was Roselle announced the Raiders select Jack Squirek, linebacker from Illinois. So it was an exciting moment for me, something I'll never forget. And, you know, just being part of, you know, the first couple of ESPN televised drafts was exciting also.
Yeah, that was a big time for professional football, and you know, the National Football League was on the cusp of becoming the most popular sport in America. When you came to the Raiders, it wasn't too long after you joined the team that there was a player strike in 1982.
Yeah. Actually, I remember that strike. I think we played three or four games, and we went on strike. And my cousin lived in Los Angeles, so I stayed with him for about a month and a half. We kind of thought it would be over sooner, so I thought I'd just stay out there. And so I stayed out there, and then eventually the strike ended, and we had a great team that year, but we played the Jets in the playoffs, and we lost that game. But I think we had a good team that year, and I think we should have actually won that game, but it is what it is.
Yeah, you guys were 8-1 in 1982. That was Marcus Allen's rookie season, and they seeded the playoffs a little differently because of the shortened season. You guys were the number one seed in the AFC, and yeah, like you said, unfortunately lost to the Jets in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
You go into 1983, and it's a totally different year. You guys go 12-4, win the AFC West, and have a pretty magical season. The team brought in some veteran players like Lyle Alzado and traded for Mike Haynes and some older veterans. Position group, you had Rod Martin and Ted Hendricks, and you know Matt Millen had been there for a few years. What was it like for you, your first couple of seasons playing with the Raiders and the guys you get to play with?
Well, it was a great experience. I mean, just meeting. I mean, in college, the linebackers that everybody on the Raiders you always looked up to, being a college player, even in high school, Ray Guy, Jim Plunkett, and you're kind of almost in awe your first year because you're around a group of guys that are your idols. And I mean, it was a great experience, and even not only the experience of being around them, just learning how to win, because those guys knew how to win. And you know, I tell people, you know, there is kind of a almost like a formula to winning. You know, it's not panicking in certain situations. It's playing hard. I remember Gene Upshaw coming up to me after film session one after a game, and he said, "Hey, great job on the kickoff tackle." And I remember thinking to myself, it was just a tackle on the kickoff. And he said, "No, that's what you're doing is very important to the team." So, I mean, it was just a teaching moment where he said, "Hey, what you're doing, even though you're a rookie and you're not playing a lot," he said, "what you're doing is very important to us winning." So, good experience all the way around.
Well, that 1980 season, like I said, you went 12-4, got off to a really good start, started off 4-0, and you played the Washington Redskins at Washington and ended up losing the game by 2 points. Marcus Allen didn't play in the game. And you only lost 3 more games the rest of the season. And after defeating Pittsburgh and Seattle in the playoffs, rather handily, you get to go down to Tampa Stadium and take on the Washington Redskins again in the Super Bowl. What do you remember of your, you know, the week leading up to the Super Bowl and your experience the day of the game? We'll get into the ins and outs of the actual game itself in a minute, but what do you remember leading up to the Super Bowl and you know, getting to Tampa and getting ready for the game?
Well, I remember just being happy to be there. You know, I remember friends calling me and saying, "I can't believe you're in the Super Bowl," and they're laughing and joking around. And like I said, I remember being happy just to go to the Super Bowl. And then we had a team meeting without, I think without the coaches, and like Gene Upshaw, Art Shell, the leaders on the team, the veterans, said, hey, we didn't come here just to be here. We came here to win. This is a business trip. We plan on winning this game. You young guys need to take this seriously. And like I said, that was another learning experience. Because hey, he's right. We came here to win. You know, it's not just a matter of being here, it's winning. I want that, you know, I wanted that ring because I had seen all the veterans walking around with the Super Bowl ring, some of them with a couple. So I remember, you know, him having that speech and just talking to us made me take it to another level and realize, hey, this is a game we need to win. This is a game we all need to take very seriously and play our best.
And you go into that game, you're playing the defending Super Bowl champs in the Washington Redskins, and you know, Marcus Allen had a great year in 1983, and we all know the great performance he had in that game, 191 yards and the 74-yard touchdown that, you know, is on every NFL Super Bowl highlight reel. But I think one of the things that we don't talk about enough was how good the defense was on the 1983 Raiders. Your team, you had Howie Long, Bill Pakel, Lyle Alzado, and you know, the linebackers I mentioned. You had Van McElroy and Mike Davis at safety to go with Haynes and Hayes. You know, you had some really good backup players also on defense as well. You know, Greg Townsend as a pass rusher. But you yourself, you know, you were a key contributor as well all season long, and then in that game, we got to talk about the play, Jack. You know, the Redskins had run that screen play in Washington to the opposite side of the field earlier in the year, and Joe Washington got a huge gain on that screen pass. Tell me, I want to hear from you. I could set it up, but I would like to hear from you kind of your understanding of how that whole situation came up. It's late in the second quarter. You're up 14-3, about to go into halftime with a decent lead, a two-score lead. What went into what happened right before halftime?
Well, I just remember Charlie Sommer, our defensive coordinator, grabbing me on the sideline and going through different scenarios, saying, hey, I guess he had spoken with Johnny Otten a few seconds earlier and said, hey, Charlie, they have that three receiver set going in, and earlier in the year they ran the screen. And how Johnny explains it, he says, Charlie said, are you sure? And he said, yeah. So he grabs me, he's like, Jack, I want you to cover Washington man-to-man, Joe Washington, they're back. He said, we're all going to be in a prevent zone. He said, so I want you to cover Washington. He said, you know, he was giving me different things, like, you know, don't do something stupid, like go for a tackle. If he catches the ball, don't try to tackle him and miss. And I remember him saying, and don't do something stupid like going for an interception and missing. And I kind of laugh about it now because, you know, in my mind, I think Charlie was trying to tell me all the scenarios that could happen. But in my mind, when you're playing a team and you have to cover a running back that runs a 40 and 4-3, your total focus is on just staying in front of him. If he catches the ball, make the tackle, you know. I wasn't thinking anything about going for an interception because my job was for him, if he catches the ball, to cover him, try to defend it. If he does catch the ball, make the tackle for a minimal gain. But I think just with all the practicing that you go through in training camp, you know, I was covering when I went out there and I went to cover Washington man-to-man, it was just a reaction. I saw the ball intercepted, it ran in. It all happened so quick that, you know, I really didn't have time to think. It was a reaction.
And I don't think Theismann or Washington knew what hit him either. Because, like you said, it happened so quick. They were backed up in their own end. They were trying to get anything going because you guys had blocked a punt for your first score, blocked and recovered by Derek Jensen. Verge of getting blown out, and I think they were just trying to get anything going, and they knew that that screen pass had worked against you guys before, and I think they ended up shell-shocked the rest of the game after that.
Yeah, I think they thought that, hey, it worked before. We could make the score, maybe get Washington to gain 40, 50 yards. We kick a field goal, and they thought they could make the score 14-6, which would, you know, bring them closer. But I think if you watch the play and you watch how it develops, you'll see Theismann drop back. You'll see Washington go out on his route. Lyle Alzado shoves Washington and knocks him off track, a little bit off balance too. And then the screen just didn't develop the way it should have. And I just, you know, the ball floated there and I kind of just made a nice break on it, intercepted it. And like you said, 21-3, the score at halftime made it pretty difficult to make a comeback.
Now, in Raiders Super Bowl history, you weren't the first guy to get an interception. However, you are one of only two Raiders to record a pick six in Super Bowl history.
Yeah.
You and Willie Brown.
Uh-huh.
Willie had to run a little further than you did, though.
Yeah.
That's elite company, Jack.
Yeah, no, I believe me, Willie's one of my idols, and I feel honored to be in that company. As far as, yeah, it would have been nicer if I could have, like, broken five tackles like James Harrison and scored an 80-yard touchdown, but I'll take it any way we can get it.
Exactly, you know, and that game, the rest of it was, you know, total domination by you guys. Obviously, the offense and Marcus Allen, they were clicking, and you guys on defense shut down the Washington Redskins, ended up winning the game 38-9. Famously, Matt Millen, one of the five most fiery players to maybe even to have ever played the game, was famously upset for being substituted for you in that situation.
Well, I think that he, believe me, he'd rather have me score a touchdown and win the game. Matt was always a team player, so I don't think it bothers him. But if I think you asked him, he would probably say, "Yeah, I could have done it." But that's the kind of player you want on your team.
Absolutely. Well, I talked to Rod Martin a couple of weeks ago, and he said that Matt wouldn't have been able to get up as high as you did to pick that one off.
Yeah, I think I had some pretty good jumping ability. And I had a couple of inches taller than Matt, so.
Well, the thought was to put you in, you know, from a speed perspective, were you always more of an athletic linebacker? Were you always kind of the outside guy?
Yeah, I was more of an athletic linebacker. Yeah, I could run and jump, and I think, yeah, probably more of an outside linebacker. Or a will linebacker in the 4-3 was probably my best positions.
Gotcha. And, you know, in that game, you had, I don't know how many Hall of Famers on the team with you. Look back at that and think, wow, I played with some amazing football players.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of take that for granted, but I know we had the two best cornerbacks that ever played as a tandem, and you know, Howie Long, Marcus Allen, Plunkett, I mean, just so many great players. You know, it's just an honor to play on that team. I always tell people I could have been drafted by the Cleveland Browns, and that would have been a great dream come true, but me playing on the Browns wouldn't have won the Super Bowl.
No, but you know what? Those Browns teams at that time were pretty good. It's not like you would have been going to the worst team in the league.
No, they were like playoff team, like wild card, or you know, they did make the playoffs a couple of years in a row. They weren't horrible, but you know, like I said, me being on that team would help us go to the Super Bowl.
Gotcha. Well, you played a few more years with the Raiders in 84 and 85. And in 1985, you had another shot at possibly getting to the Super Bowl. Ended up losing to New England in the playoffs. That was a year Marcus Allen won the NFL's MVP award. That was a pretty good team you were on there, too.
Yeah, that was a little disappointing that we didn't play in that Super Bowl. I mean, I definitely think, you know, you hate to say we should have won, but we should have won that game, and I think we would have definitely made that Super Bowl a lot more interesting than what it was. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
I tend to agree with you. I think you guys would have put up a bigger fight against the 85 Bears, as good as the Bears were.
Yeah. Not taking anything away from the Bears now. But.
No, not at all. I just think it would have been it could have been one of those, you know, come down to the end type games.
Yeah, exactly.
Jack, what are some of your more fond memories from playing for the Raiders? What are some of the other things that you take away from your career?
Well, like I said, I just had a lot of fun, met a lot of friends. My two roommates, Van McElroy was my roommate, Ed Moransky, and just being with them and, you know, guys from different colleges and telling our experiences of our college experience and how we grew up differently. And, you know, just I think being around the Raiders was they're a fun bunch of guys. I think when you're on a winning team, it's more of a relaxed atmosphere and it's more fun, enjoyable. So just meeting, you know, different types of players from different types parts of the country, you know, just a great experience, you know.
Yeah. And we in the organization, and I'm certainly can speak for Raider Nation, are forever indebted to you and your teammates for what you did that January Sunday in 1984 against the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, I'll definitely never forget that. Definitely a highlight of my life. Great experience, and learned a lot from that also.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, Jack, I want to thank you for joining me on Once a Raider, Always a Raider.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely.
Squirek and Townsend will be forever remembered, along with their teammates, for their tremendous victory in Super Bowl XVIII. I hope you enjoyed this week's show. That's going to do it for this edition of Once a Raider, Always a Raider. For my guests, Greg Townsend and Jack Squirek, I have been Jerry Knack. Until next time, Raider Nation.
Thank you for listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider on the official Raiders Podcast Network.